Welcome to the pod, everyone. A shout out to SGS.
Hey, Rusty, why are we partnering with SGS?
Some good people there. Pretty excited about their sports coaching courses and sports courses. Keen to make them industry ready, so when people leave, they're able to go and transfer it to any kind of industries, coaching, teaching, being an analyst, business, whatever it might be. So I think it's pretty exciting times, really.
So what's so special about their degree courses that others won't be doing?
I think it'll be lots of real good partnerships, opportunities for people to get into different contexts and learn and practice. It'll be feel very applied. People will be stretched and supported and will leave ready to just go and thrive in the big old world out there.
SGS College is the home of Bristol's higher education sports programmes. The programmes are designed to develop unique, innovative and creative sports practitioners ready for industry. Do you want to be a coach or teacher of the future? Start your journey here at SGS College and become more than just a graduate. Visit sgscol.ac.uk to apply now.
Okay, live from the kitchen, Richard Berry.
Nice to be here, Russ.
Cool. We've thrown Elsa out.
Yeah, she was doing some painting. I was a bit concerned about her left-hand print as opposed to her right-hand print. It wasn't quite there.
So we sent her off to do some practice.
Indeed,
and she'll come back to
us. With some encouraging words.
Yeah, like, look, thanks for coming in. I've been dying to do this for ages. We've obviously both got lots of connections in the rugby world mutually, and we'll definitely explore some of those. But let's go back. Where did it all start? Have you ended up in our kitchen?
Okay, so reasonably successful schoolboy rugby player, reasonably successful. I went to St Brendan's College, which was one of the top rugby schools in the country at the time. 30 games a season. Most schoolboy internationals of any school in the country, and only two senior internationals. So there's a question there, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know, how much we were rugby philosophy in.
Most in the country?
Most in the country,
wow.
Yeah. There's a massive board at the school which lists, series of schoolboy internationals. And
who were the two?
Mike Rafter and an Irish guy whose name escapes my name.
Okay.
Memory now. But yeah. So from there, trained as a PE teacher. And I'm very embarrassed to say that... I was one of those Sergeant Major PE teachers back in the late 80s.
I can't imagine this.
Command and response exercises and stuff like that. And my rugby coaching sort of developed. I was a county schools coach and very drill-based, through the 80s, 90s. And that was about control, I suppose. Think about what it was about. It was about you staying in control, you being very prescriptive, developing skills, so you think. And then from there,
Out of interest, was anyone doing anything different then? So
no.
In the 80s, 90s, it was. No. It was just.
Actually, as part of my 4-year degree, we had somebody called Lynn Spackman who wrote Games for Understanding, right? A whole approach about doing different sized balls and stuff like that, and we all just dismissed it because it was just some bloody crackpot who's trying to introduce something new. Educational gymnastics and games for understanding. Oh my god. Anyway, from there, like I said, coaching county school stuff, my own school stuff, and then mid-90s, still playing at my club, Old Bristolians. And
was this giving you success, this type of coaching, whatever you thought success was then?
Yeah, I suppose it was. I mean, we were some of the boys were Beanie came through Bristol schools with
Sean
me.
Sean Marsden, that might explain why he's struggling.
And, players like that. And there was some success there, but it was about just staying in the game and being part of the game, I suppose, as much as anything else, because the game's just a great...
What was Beanie like to coach?
Very, very mouldable, actually. Yeah. Quite quiet at the time, and he's still quiet, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
But a thinker. Yeah, so from there, my club started a mini and junior section 12, 13 years ago from nothing. And we now have 450 young people playing rugby every weekend. And right back then, I was sort of lead coach within that, and I did my level 2 8-9 years ago, probably 10 years ago, and that completely changed the way that I coach, coaching through games, getting boys and girls to think more rather than it being prescriptive, less questioning. And then 5 years ago, when Gary Townsend came back to Bristol, he approached me. We'd coached together at county schools back in the 90s, And he approached me and asked me...
That's the
1890s. Yeah, it's compulsory. You might notice that anybody in the Bristol Academy has no hair and very short and bald, other than GT, who's the tall one. Anyway, I digress. Five, 6 years ago, would I be involved in the Academy? He wanted Bristol people helping Bristol boys move forward. And that's been, it's been a revelation, really, you know, joining that workforce and developing the lads through the academy setup. I run a DPP centre in Weston-super-Mare with four or five other coaches, and we're constantly analysing what we're doing and developing each other as much as developing the kids.
We're going to talk about other stuff later. What are you most proud of? So my son's in the DPP, so... Yeah. I wonder what do you notice as someone who's organising it, and I can maybe tell you some of the stuff as a parent that I'm noticing.
One of the things I'm most proud of from within the DPP setup is the fact that the boys thank you every week. They come and shake your hand, you know. And really interestingly, I've told this story a couple of times. A new coach recently came in, and I was late to session. He and I were working with 25 boys or so. And he said, "Is it okay? I'll start tonight." I said, "Yeah, no problem. Carry on." I was doing a bit of admin, got out, and he'd started with a drill, and it was a passing drill. And I just raised an eyebrow, didn't say anything. 20 minutes of drill, go into our normal touch related games, and the intensity was really low. The error count was really, really low. And I stopped it and said, "Ask them why they think this is happening as opposed to what normally happens." And the fantastic thing is the kids were able to analyse it, you know. Because we've taught, helped them, and got them to learn. And they basically said, intensity was low at the start. You had us standing around while four boys were working. We lost concentration, therefore we're bored, therefore we're not able to up the ante now.
Yeah.
And that's a massive revelation, isn't it? You know, cool. And his eyes were just like, oh, wow.
Let's call it feedback.
But, you know, that sort of feedback and getting, you know, other bits and pieces, you know, a month or so ago, I just stopped the session and I said to team A, I said, get together, think of three things that the other team could do to improve. Team B, think of three things that the other team could do to improve. And that was just 30 seconds of speaking from me. And there then came out 2 or 3 minutes from each set of boys and the game level just went up. Self-analysis, understanding what they can do to improve, all those bits, and hearing it from your peers is so much more powerful.
Yeah, so true. And a quick shout out, Mark Bateman, England hockey, under-16s this weekend, did that with Scotland.
Right.
So they were in each other's meetings, half times, came over, and he said one of the Scottish lads came over to the England under-16 and said, our feedback to you, we want it more than you do. That's pretty good feedback, isn't it?
Yeah,
so I love that. What have I noticed as a parent? I wrote that it's a really open environment, so often I'll see coaches, parents on the pitch, GT explaining, engaging with them in only the way GT can.
Absolutely, yeah.
Kids run lots of stuff. They would organise it. They would be deciding the rules of the games. I think it's based around developing skill.
It is.
I would challenge it around, as it was interesting chatting to Fletch about this last night, I think lots of people, there's probably more of an emphasis on attack than there is on defence.
Yeah.
The coaches know the kids really well.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
they're,
really know
they're
the
class.
Kids very
so
well.
Of course the kids thank them and fist pump them, and because they know the coaches care for them.
Yeah, interestingly, you know, if you look at the outcomes from games, so when we actually go to play games, actually some of the technical stuff isn't there, and you know, I think there are elements to bring the technical stuff in. GT and I have talked about that. We've certainly focused a little bit more on defence recently because that, again, you know, that's an area that we realise needs to be developed. But you know, I've got a meeting on Wednesday with him and four other centre managers, where we'll start thinking about what we bring in and how we develop it going forward. And that is an open forum. That's not a diktat. This isn't a rule list of rules about what we do. We develop in each centre.
Yeah, and I would imagine, look, there'll be some kids that might need to be taken out of the game and do some passing. Of course there would be. Because, you know, I'm seeing some kids yesterday who've already been stood on the wing up until the age of 14 and haven't passed that much. And so clearly there'll be some benefits.
Yeah. Okay, the other thing is, obviously, with the lads gravitating up to PDG, so, you know, those boys who go up to that next level, we bring them back in once or two.
Yeah, so Fred likes that.
We bring them back in. It gives something for the DPP boys to aspire to. And sometimes, you know, they better those kids and it helps those kids in the PDG.
Fred said that. We've had a couple of PDG lads back and...
raise their aspirations a little bit.
More skill in them.
Yeah.
The other thing I really like is the mixed age group. So the fact that as an under 13, you could be with an under 15, it's pretty much all non-contact.
Absolutely.
And so they are... getting to mentor younger kids, they're getting to learn and have stretch off older kids. I really like the kind of melting pot that goes on there.
Yeah, we work on role modelling as well. You know, we work on reactions to a poor experience. So, you know, if a kid throws a ball on the floor because he's taken a forward pass or knocked it on or what have you, hey, just think about what the impression you're making with other people here, because, you know, that will affect you going forward. You know, let's focus on getting it right, improving stuff, moving forward. It's just a great environment.
It's cool, isn't it? It's the most alive my son is all week. So let's talk about your other world. So you've got another world that connects up nicely with your rugby world, which is going to lead us into talking about some stuff.
So I'm a head teacher of a special school in Somerset. It's a special school for boys, 72 boys at the moment, aged 10 to 16, who have identified social emotional mental health issues. So I've been doing that for 7 years. And in that time, I've probably learned more as a teacher than I did in the previous 25. I've been teaching for 32 years, I'm old git. But never too old to learn. And I would say the stuff that I've learned around brain development, neuroscience, is massive, and it affects everything that I do. And you know, you and I got together back in the autumn following an unsavoury incident where you were cross about what had happened on the side of a pitch, and I began to explain some of the effects that could go on with the kids. And from there, things have taken off because I put a presentation together which the GRFU looked at, and I'm now the GRFU Mental Health and Wellbeing Ambassador. And since January, I've done about 9 presentations to rugby clubs across the area.
Let's call it a world tour.
It's a world tour. It's becoming a world tour. I'm in Exmouth tomorrow night. I was in Chard last Thursday, so it is becoming
Exmouth,
a world tour.
Exmouth, home of Billy Searle.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So, that's a really interesting development. I was lucky enough to go up to meet with the RFU Game Development Board in February to do a presentation to them and to get them thinking about how we can support both adults in signposting them, but also for me it's about the growth of kids.
Cool. And I've seen you deliver. I've chatted through your presentation with you, and it's iterated and it's become better, and I'm excited to see, like, Wembley, which will be the last one on the Wembley's going to be mega, isn't it?
It's going to be huge.
If you could summarize and go, what are the 3-4 key things that you've noticed from your work there and with rugby and all your research to go, this is the stuff that I'm seeing as very important?
The first thing I would say is after a presentation last Monday and a presentation last Thursday, and I asked for questions, everybody was dumbfounded. They couldn't ask questions because their brains were processing so much.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, it's about helping parents and coaches understand how to communicate with young people so that they can learn. And there's a really simple thing to say, and that is that in any class in a primary school at the moment, the guesswork is that there's 3 to 6 kids with a mental health issue in a primary class of 30 kids. So if you translate that into the rugby club and you translate that into your age group, you're going to have between 1 and 3 and 4 young people who may have a mental health issue. Or the likelihood is they may go on to develop a mental health issue. And the reason behind that is around their brain development and neuroscience.
And what do you mean by mental health issue?
Anxiety. It's about understanding how the different parts of the brain operate and how they grow. And that's the key to it. So basically, when we're all born, we all have a reptilian brain, which is life-preserving. It works on principles where it dumps hormone into the system and causes the 3F syndrome, the flight, fright, freeze syndrome. And then from there, the limbic system grows around that, and that governs our emotions, and then around that grows the neocortex. The neocortex, they think, grows up to the age of 24. So there's constant pruning of neurons in the brain all the way through teenage years, which is why we get such swings in emotion.
Till 24 would be a key 24. Thing as well. So yeah. Lots of people also think that at 18, they've become an adult.
Well, lots of people think that the brain is fully grown at 11, which is why we have a secondary education system that we have. That's where it comes from. Because the Victorians thought the brain was developed at age 11, and that's why you went to secondary school to learn all the knowledge you needed.
Wow.
Okay, so...
Well, that would explain a lot.
Absolutely, but you and I both know that we've dealt with a lot of people a bit older than 24 who aren't quite emotionally mature.
Yeah.
Right? We may not be emotionally mature ourselves. I can certainly think some of the things I did when I was at late 20s, which certainly weren't mature. Anyway, it tends to be earlier in women because of child rearing, later in men. And so the neocortex growing around is the bit that helps soothe and fire the limbic system into soothing the reptilian responses that you get. The problem with that is that without love and nurture and care from significant adults, those two parts of the brain don't significantly develop. And we know that from brain scanning of some of the Romanian orphans, that actually there are huge gaps in their brain development. And what that means is they're constantly stressed because flight, fright, freeze is constantly being triggered because they're not used to being loved, they're not used to being in difficult surroundings. So if we take that into a rugby context, okay, and we talked earlier that there will be some young people within your coaching age group who may have the propensity to suffer or may already be suffering. One of the things that will cause them anxiety is shouting. Domestic violence. So if we take that out of the home and we put it onto a rugby pitch where you've got a shouty coach, and that shouty coach could be causing that brain inside that child to be firing and causing toxic stress in that child. Alternatively, if you've got a coach who asks questions that helps grow resilience in young people, who gets down at kids' level, and I mean physically gets down at their level, is able to put an arm around their shoulder, isn't confrontational being face-to-face, gets alongside them. There's a reason we say get alongside kids. It means that you're not in their face. Uses good hand gestures as opposed to pointy, waggy fingers and all those things. Then actually, we're not triggering those reptilian responses in those kids. And therefore we've got happy kids, and happy kids stay in the game. And my challenge to coaches, there's two challenges. When you do a safeguarding course, you talk about scenarios, and one of the scenarios is, what would you do if you saw a coach slap a child on the leg? You'd report it because it's inappropriate. Well, why allow a coach to slap a child in the brain?
Yeah.
Because you're causing injury, you just can't see it. Right? And you know, from that point of view, if you're encouraging and you are non-shouty and non-aggressive and everybody feels comfortable in your sessions, those kids are going to stay in the game. And do you want to judge yourself by the number of silver cups in the trophy cabinet from your age group 13 to 18, or do you want to judge yourself by the number of those kids who are playing adult rugby? Because that should be the basis for our mini and junior game. It's giving kids fun, making it happy, but also helping them move forward into the adult game and enjoy the things that you and I have enjoyed so much from the game over the years.
That was the first one. Some stuff I heard, some stuff that I'm thinking about for coaches. One is, and I get this, so being side on with someone is much less confrontational. So let's go for a walk and talk is different to let's sit opposite and I'll write notes and I'll do that. Second thing is just being aware of your body language. Yeah. So I know lots of great coaches. Matt Way in hockey. I saw Charlie doing this in handball the other day where they actually just get down. And the kids often say, coaches who are on our level. Mm. And I think they mean physical. I think they mean all the other stuff as well. So thinking about your body language, pointing, all that stuff is probably not that helpful if they've got someone pointing at them at home.
There's a great Yellow Pages advert. All right,
J.R. Hartley.
No, not that one. Not the J.R. Hartley one. It's the one with the Irish guy off Cold Feet, and I can't remember his name. Haircut,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Right, and it's about, you know, him cutting his niece's hair, and it goes on. Look it up anyway. If you're listening to this, look it up. And basically, when he goes into the hairdresser's at the end, and he's ranting with his body at the hairdresser, she doesn't hear a word he's saying, and he's saying really nice things, because actually, when we meet somebody for the first time, we connect through the eyes. And then from there, we look at the facial expression and the body language, and from there, we then listen to the voice. So if you're in somebody's face and you're wagging your finger, even if you're saying nice things, they're not going to hear them because they're just looking at body language. So getting alongside, down low, arm around the shoulder, what have you, you know, it's really, really significant.
I observed a kid coach the other day for a whole day wearing sunglasses, and I thought, that's not that helpful with kids. No. They can't read what's going on.
Yeah.
The other stuff I heard was a tone of voice.
Yeah.
And then actually, I think it's about asking them. So obviously, I was speaking to some parents yesterday and asking them if they would like the kids in their work shouting at them. But, I mean, did we ask the kids, how can we support you? How can we help you today? What's the stuff you want from us as adults to help you?
Yeah. And how often, you know, do we set objectives for the session that the kids can understand? So, right, today we're going to do this, and at the end of it, did we achieve it? If we didn't achieve it, what were the things that went wrong? Get them to answer those questions rather than going off the pitch thinking, yeah, I cracked it today, and all the kids going home saying that was crap.
Cool. So, first thing I've heard is you had lots of parents confused.
Yeah.
But actually, just because, I guess we don't know what we don't know. So,
no,
it's only recent times that the Sarah Jane Blakemore type stuff has made this more accessible to people, actually, teenage brain development.
Yeah.
And what are the implications for us as coaches?
Yeah, well, so the Sarah Jane Blakemore stuff's really fascinating, isn't it? You know, risk-taking with kids and stuff like that, because they like to have dopamine in their brains. So when you say, you know, Fred, don't go down the skate park without your pants and helmet on, he tells you to go forth and multiply because he wants to be risky.
Yeah.
Okay? So, you know, it is about that opportunity when that brain is developing on how we can help them be risky.
Yeah.
Within a safe way, you know, and not to get into confrontation when they want to do something, but explain really simply, you know, within school, we constantly have confrontation because the kids are wired in that way. That's the way that the background from which they come from. And therefore, we have to stay calm, because if we don't stay calm and we don't support them in the conversations that we're having, then we are not using our brains to think for them. The moment you get into confrontation, or the moment you start getting to a shouting match, the likelihood is it will be mirrored back. And when it's mirrored back, that just escalates our hackles and we start arguing even more.
Yeah, yeah. So modelling it would be critical. Yeah. I see lots of... I'm thinking, no wonder the kids can't self-regulate. So
when
I coached the other week.
Yeah.
And the kids were... I was refereeing, and the kids were... they were getting agitated. So I said, look, close your eyes, kids. Put your hand up if your parents shout at the ref. Every single person put their hand up. I said, oh, put your hand up if... I didn't say your parents, I said your dad. Put your hand up if your dad shouts at you. And they all put their hand up. I'm dying at this point.
Yeah, imagine.
And at the end, I said, look, here's a little challenge. See if you can have a conversation with your parent, with your dad around this. And one of the kids said, should we tell our mums to stop shouting as well? And I thought, oh... I'm dying, but it's...
But actually, you know, I think mums might be the key to solving some of our problems. Because,
well, you just
know,
said that.
I said, you know, the couple of courses I've done where there have been mums or female coaches there, they're the people who are prepared to go and challenge these guys on the touchline who are shouting.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I think that from my point of view, the whole thing that I'm trying to do with the sessions that I'm running is about giving people the information to be able to challenge it. Because, you know... It's horrific. The mental health issues are horrific. Okay, you and I discussed the other week. You know, I came across 3 suicides, 2 teenage suicides, and a 21-year-old in the space of 3 days who were all connected through the game. 2 of whom I'd coached, and that's me. And then, you know, we're doing this work, I'm hearing more and more and more. And what we know is that suicidal tendencies come from mental health issues, and they tend to be started in teenage years, and at least 50% of them, 75% of them, are formed by the age of 21. And suicide is the biggest killer in this country of people, young men under the age of 50. So, you know, part of my presentation, I do guess how many people were killed in the UK in 2018 in road traffic accidents. Guess how many people were killed in the UK through substance misuse. Have you seen public information films about safety around those things? Have we seen anything about suicide? No, because of the stigma that's attached to it.
Yeah.
So we no longer talk about people committing suicide. We talk about people taking their life, because the stigma was, if you commit suicide, it's a crime. And we need to take the crime stat out of it. So come back to basics. if we, and within our rugby setup and within our coaching, are growing resilient kids through the way that we coach, there's less likelihood that they will have mental health issues or even go on to commit suicide at later life.
Give me some practical solutions for coaches. Some simple stuff. I'm thinking of some stuff as well, but definitely. Can I go first?
Yeah, you go first.
I think what you said earlier is the most important thing. So, love, care. Yeah,
love, care.
Strong relationships. Understand where that kid's come from would be critical for me. And then probably my second one would be always trying to catch people doing stuff well. I would focus kids, especially around what they can do. They get lots of other opportunities in other areas to be told what they're not that good at. I generally want to see what they're good at, and then I want to stretch them.
Absolutely.
So use that as a way for them to move forward at their pace rather than my pace.
I agree completely. We've got to understand that many of the guys who are coming into rugby clubs and coaching have never had any experience of coaching other than the way that they were coached.
They were coached by you.
Yeah, they were. That shouty, 20 years shouty ago. Sergeant Major.
Yeah.
You know, that drill focused person. And therefore we've got to educate them quickly as to the way forward. And if we don't get in and educate, and we just allow a group of coaches to start an age group and go through without any coach education whatsoever, then we're setting ourselves up to fail, because we're just reinventing the wheel. And we can't reinvent the wheel, because things are different nowadays as far as mental health is concerned. You know, the predisposition to mental health issues is growing massively, and I've got all my theories around that as well. You know, I'm lucky enough to be able to present at national conferences within my field of work and speak to some of the top people in the country around why those things are happening. And you know, it's clear, you know, that social media is a massive issue for young people.
Yeah,
but it's not the main issue. It is resilience and attachment to adults. So if you've got good attachment to adults, if you get something crap coming through on social media, it washes off you. Right, providing that continuation, you're able to continue those relationships with the adults around you.
Can I just talk a little bit?
Yeah.
I mean, you've mentioned attachment, and a real life example. I have quite a lot of coaches. I had a coach contact me the other day and say, I think I'm this kid's the daddy never had. That
Absolutely.
Would be
Absolutely.
That. So the young people having those connections that can catch them when they fall or can support them, and often they don't at home.
No.
So clearly. What's happened in homes in recent years will be a big part of it. But actually being able to understand kids so you can form strong emotional attachments so they can then explore and try stuff and then come back and have someone that can help them make sense of the world that they can trust.
There is an absolute golden key to that, though, and that's you've got to be emotionally intelligent yourself. Because unless you're able to appreciate other people's emotions, you can't take it further. So, you know, I think that's something that we can all learn to be. We can all learn to listen properly, as opposed to, you know, being on a phone in the middle of a conversation or what have you. You know, we can all learn to ask those questions. Are you okay? Yeah, we're in a macho game most of the time. You know, if 20 years ago, if you'd asked me to put my arm around one of my mates in the rugby club and say, are you okay? I would have laughed you out of this room. But it's important that we're all able to, because it's okay not to be okay.
Yeah.
And the stigma is it's not okay not to be okay. And that's why people end up taking their own lives, you know. And that, and I don't want to go deep and miserable, but
that's,
you know, the reality is, we're seeing it more and more, and therefore we need to do as much as we can to stop it.
And what are the pieces of advice? So I've heard that you've just tagged on a bit of listening there. Actually, thinking about the questions you ask, I often think, "You okay? Yeah, you okay?" Often it can be very flippant.
Yeah.
Interestingly, one of the things we were talking about with Suzanne Brown was about how you end conversations as well, or how you end. So, for example, say someone doesn't get selected for, you know, something, then actually, what do those conversations look like? It's definitely got me thinking about it a bit, you know, how well do I do that?
The great thing is that we're always learning, aren't we? You know, and I'm not the greatest coach in the world. I don't pretend to be. You know, I'm not the expert attack coach that your man was the other day that you were interviewing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dave Ross, but expert.
Absolutely. But I think, you know, in that learning bit, open-ended questions at the end, and that support to say at the end of the conversation, this conversation isn't finished. You know, I'm always open to listen if you've got something else to add, or, you know, if you want to come back to me, have a thought about it, this is, you can do that. And that help, you know, if you say to somebody, go away and think about it and then come back to me, what are you doing? You're embedding their thinking process around the learning.
Yeah. And what, so I guess with you, the other thing I'm thinking about with your delivery is you obviously delivering to a lot of coaches, and in our world, lots of the coaches are parents, but also I suspect, well, because the one I went to, there was lots of parents who I can also vouch for the fact that they were relatively speechless.
Yeah.
What's the stuff that they can do, or what's the stuff that you've seen maybe some of the best environments starting to do that can help with this?
So I think, you know, that love and care is really, really important, and not to allow, you know, I've got a big thing about, I think parenting should be on the secondary curriculum. You know, it's the biggest job we have in life that we're at least training for, you know, you know, I think there's a lot of digital parenting going on at the moment. And that really worries me.
What do you mean by that?
I mean by kids being given phones to keep them occupied, or by parents being so preoccupied with their own phones actually that they're not actually talking to kids. So, you know, in my household, both my boys are really, really emotionally grounded. That's to do with a lot of stuff that my wife's done as opposed to stuff that I've done. But it's about we have a no phone rule at the dinner table. Right, and you know, so that we sit down and we have a conversation. I saw some research coming out of the States the other day that basically said a half an hour, 20-minute conversation at the dinner table is twice as valuable as any homework that the kids do.
Of course it is.
Because there's more learning going on from how adults behave and how we can interact with each other, and having a conversation is a life skill.
Yeah.
Some of the homework you do has got nothing to do with adults. Anyway, that's by the by.
I was thinking that as my son started saying, oh, we started doing trigonometry, and I was fighting saying, I bet you never need it. Unless you're working out like the where to put sleepers on the side of the triangular garden.
Anyway, yeah. So, you know, I think the way that parents support, you know, there's that old adage is don't get back in the car and talk about the game, talk about something different, or ask the young person what went well today rather than to impose your own
feelings,
first version of events that you see through your competitive instincts. There's that great video, isn't there, from the Canadian Hockey Association of the kids.
I just put it on this morning.
Did you? Kid stood in the background watching his dad putt in front of his business mates and criticising him. So, you know, let's get away from the criticism. Let's talk about what was enjoyable.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your take-homes from
it. And you mentioned some stuff around club philosophy, so I think that was some stuff that you'd... based upon some of your meetings, parents have been coming with.
So, you know, I think one of the things that people find it really difficult is because not... Very few of us are confrontational people, but, you know, when we see confrontation on the touchline or a coach behaving badly or a parent behaving badly, it's sometimes difficult to go and tackle that. I know you and I have had conversations about how that can be difficult.
Yeah.
All right. And
why is it always me?
It's not always you.
That's what my wife says. Why is it always you?
But there are others out there doing it as well. But I think, you know, I think the ability to lay the ground beforehand. So in any emails that take place around before the fixtures or before training sessions, this is the way that we behave. Signage at clubs, this is the way that we behave. But empowering parents, especially mums, which is where I was going just now, with the knowledge that actually by shouting and screaming from the touchline anything that is not positive, then actually, you know, you could be damaging your child's mental health, and therefore that's why it needs to stop. That's why, you know, if shouting and screaming at a kid who's dropped a pass for the umpteenth time or what have you, how is that making them feel? You know, you are, as a coach, I'm sure the intention is not to injure them mentally, but you are in danger of doing that if that kid's got a predisposition into being ill.
Suzanne Brown says, we're the architects of each other's brains.
Yes, absolutely. We mould each other's brains, we create each other's brains, and the way that we behave as adult role models is really important.
I'm really interested in speaking with one of friends' dads yesterday at the thing, and he was speaking about his son just joined the show, and so he was completely new to rugby, and he was just saying, look, he's just started to get over that fear of, you know, being, you know, trying stuff, to, you know, coming off his wing, touching the ball. So, you know, I mean, however, no one would know that he's experiencing that unless he asked them the question.
No, absolutely.
You can't see inside people's brains, which is why often people go, oh, it's just a concussion. And I'm thinking, what, just a brain injury?
Part of my presentation from a professional basis, not the rugby one, is actually, you know, I ask the question, what do cardiologists do? Well, they scan your heart. What do radiologists do? Well, they take x-rays of your brains or MRIs. What do psychiatrists do? right? And top neuroscientists have said in the past that psychiatrists used to throw bloody darts at a dartboard with a blindfold on because they weren't looking inside. And now that we've got brain scanning, it's starting to show us so much more. You know, MRI scans and other scans of the brain are starting to show us how the brain develops. You know, it takes, according to Andrew Curran, who's a top guy at Old Hay Hospital in Liverpool, it takes 500 rehearsals to grow an emotional neuron. Right? So it's not just a one-off thing.
That's why my daughter isn't saying please and thank you still, is it? She's on 498.
But you embed it through practice. In the same way that we embed skills through practice, you grow emotional neurons through practice. Right? And that's about the constant of the adult.
Wow. And actually where we were talking there was about, so actually clubs having more of a philosophy around, you know, almost the kids' first philosophy, or they hear some principles around how the adults in the room behave, how do we, you know, so the half game rule, that type of...
Yeah, so that comes down to the stuff that we go through on the Play It Safe course. I'm also an RFU safeguarding tutor. It's down to, you know, codes of practice. How do we enforce them? How do we remind? You know, every club's got them, but are they gathering dust on the website somewhere or are they out there?
Yeah.
Do you bring them out at the beginning of every season? Are they prominent? Do we reinforce them? So, you know, if they're there for a reason. And you know, if you say kids first, all right, what does that mean to people? You know, because people aren't analysing; they're saying kids first, but they're not actually thinking what does that mean and what does that look like. Because what it means to me is actually the kids are out there playing, and the adults are superfluous. And if the adults are superfluous to it, it's about the kids' enjoyment. But if the adults intervene, it's adults first, not kids first.
I'm seeing a lot of adults first clubs.
Yes.
I mean, that's a good way of putting it. We are an adult, you know.
Kids first club.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Or be honest and say we're an adults first club. Yeah. And if you want your kids to come in, then you be prepared.
Maybe we should have a grading system on that sliding scale, like the old clapometer. Have we got the kids going?
And who have you noticed doing it well? So.
Yeah, so I was at Broad Plain Rugby Club this week. And
Marcel, the mighty Marcel.
Yeah, mighty Marcel. So I did 32 people, 25 people on a Play It Safe course, which was brilliant. So I had 25 coaches in the room, two of which weren't from Broad Plain, the 23 were. And then I looked out the window and there are kids everywhere playing with loads of other adults being supportive. You know, and just brilliant. Local community club firing really, really well.
Yeah.
Obviously, my own club, we've had hiccups in the past with certain year groups, but on the whole, you know, the enjoyment. I was at our under-16s valedictory dinner the other night where they got given their caps.
Yeah, some cool pictures.
Some really, really
lovely. Batley.
Joe Batley was there. Great Joe Batley with his fantastic messages. And, you know, the whole ethos around that, the kids said, you know, none of us felt better than each other. We all had loads of game time. You know, we would choose who came on and went off. We could choose where we played. And, you know, Henry's coaching of that squad's been absolutely fantastic. And, you know, those kids will stay in the game. That's a great thing. They're all looking forward to next season and merging with the Colts next year. So really, really good.
Henry Bellingham doing a great job as well. DPP coach. I do think once again though, one of the things the DPP does really well is give local coaches the ability to go and develop.
No, I agree.
And connect.
And, you know, I was talking to Smudge last week when I was down at Chard, and you know previously I've met Smudge because he brought four or five coaches who were on their new coaching qualification. And he brought them along to look at what the DPP looked like. And they were speechless. They were gobsmacked because a couple of them saw players who they were normally coaching at their clubs completely excelling.
Yeah.
Which they said they're not half as motivated at the club.
It's just Gary's there.
Yeah, well, Gary wasn't there actually. But, you know, their desire to, you know, in an environment with like-minded boys is just to raise the level. And the intensity of the activity we do is really important. And, you know, that's one thing that we all need to bring to our coaching, isn't it? Is intensity, because how often have we stood around doing very little?
Yeah.
You know, and how is that growing mentally healthy kids? It's not.
No.
Get them playing. Because, you know, if we're getting them playing and they're play, I talk about, you know, constant with very few interruptions, just some open questions. How can we adapt? What can we do? What would you bring to this? Okay. It's releasing a lot of dopamine. If dopamine release in the brain, you're smiling.
Yeah.
You're happy kids.
It's a kids first.
It's kids first.
Tell me about your world tour. So you've got a few more, things on the horizon.
A few more things on the horizon.
Is Tim Ravenscroft your booking agent? Tim's doing some good stuff, isn't he?
Certainly, he's doing some fantastic stuff. And everything I tweet, he's on it straight away. So Gloucestershire wise, we've got a couple of kids safeguarding conferences coming up where we'll be having some mental health input into that. I'm going to train as a mental health first aider trainer so I can get out into clubs and give people qualifications around what to look for as well.
Nice.
So that's good. Exmouth on Tuesday, and then I'm open for bookings. There are lots of clubs expressed an interest, but with the closed season now, is it the right time to do it, or is it better to do it late August, early September is the question I'm asking. Next week is National Mental Health Week, 13th to the 19th, and I've just done a flyer this morning for the GRFU that's going to go social media and out on the website for all clubs just to stay in touch with people. Because, think about the quiet ones, the people who are on their own, make sure you stay in touch, because this is the time when, if they haven't got the rugby club there supporting them, then it could be difficult.
And you're retiring soon.
I am, yeah.
So you're going to have loads of spare time.
Early retirement.
Loads of spare time.
32 years of teaching, so hanging the boots up as a head teacher with an idea that do a bit more academy work and some freelancing. I want to do more with the RFU. Like I said, went up and spoke to the Game Development Board. I think they're a bit preoccupied with pound notes at the moment, or pound signs and what they're doing there. But certainly, there were lots of people expressing an interest in what I showed them. And I think that we could develop further. I mean, I think we're a bit behind as far as the union is concerned. There's stuff from New Zealand and Australia that's out there that's really, really good, website-based stuff.
Cool. Give me some shout-outs. Websites.
headfirst.nz.co.nz, I think it is. Really, really good resource. And that's, as I sent you earlier, in countries where there's a lot of rural activity, so Australia and New Zealand, they've had a lot of mental health issues in the farming industry, and which is where they've adapted stuff from those industries. Web-based stuff that's really, really good to bring forward. There's loads of YouTube stuff that's worth looking at. The Body Language Expert is one to look at. So, part of my presentation is around understanding the effects of social media. And we talked earlier that, if you're not feeling great, you're not resilient, and, kids get their social media accounts, they probably know a third of the people who they're connected to as friends.
Yeah.
And therefore, there's an opportunity for them to have bad stuff come back to them. If they're resilient, that washes off. If they're not resilient, it begins to take effect. And that's because the English language is a wonderful thing, but you can read a lot of things into the English language in different ways. So on my presentation, there's a slide that says, you did really well today with guys shaking a player's hand, really looking happy. And then there's another one that's saying, you did really well today with two guys in behind laughing and pointing. So depending on where you're at mentally, it was how you'll read that that tweet or that Snapchat or that Insta that comes back. Tim won't mind me saying, but he caught his son the other week taking selfies of himself and with the initials underneath OBS. He was asking for observations on the photographs that he was sending out. Yeah. So young people do things where they just don't think about the consequences. They're always looking for admiring comments, good comments. It's what I call the Love Island syndrome. They're always looking for good stuff to come back, but actually when the negative comes back, they don't have the skills to handle that. So getting on top of that social media stuff's really, really important.
Cool. And those skills would be important. And I do love Love Island. And I do love your shows. I think I haven't been to the road shows, so if anyone wants to get in touch,
Rich Bezzer at Rich Bezzer on Twitter. Go to the GRFU website and you'll find my contact details on there as well. More than happy to come out and talk through issues and do a presentation to coaches, parents. I'm going to develop a presentation for young people because I think that's important as
Yeah, cool.
So, you brought along
Angus.
Angus along.
He loved it. We had an amazing... So I took him home afterwards and we had an amazing conversation in the car around... Yeah. Do you know what? Some of that stuff I'd never even thought about. Oh, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, because I think it's important that, to be healthy, you've got to be able to see what might be happening to you as well.
Yeah.
Because sometimes kids just think that things are normal and they're not. So yeah, so that's exciting stuff, and all nice. To come forward.
What would be your? I was going to ask you what's your top three tips, but what was the stuff you wish you'd known 20 years ago? That might be the same thing. That might be your top tips.
Yeah, I wish I'd known what my shouting was doing, you know, and how I was affecting kids. You know, I have some horrendous memories about teaching. I remember a kid who couldn't stop smiling when I was telling him off, and, you know, it was driving me absolutely batty.
But that would have been me. I get really nervous when people tell me off.
Well, that's the reptilian response.
Yeah.
That's you know, the kid was absolutely pooping himself, and I thought he was taking the mickey out of me. So, you know, I'm sorry if you're listening to this podcast, whoever you were at Free College.
We should know the impact you were shouting.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What else?
Yeah. I think letting the kids do the learning as opposed to me thinking I was making them learn.
Yeah.
So helping them to question and develop their practice themselves to embed the learning, really, really, really important.
Yeah.
Third
one.
Don't be frightened of physical contact in the right way. Because an arm around the shoulder, I don't care what, you know, if schools have got a no-touch policy, I think that's ridiculous. But an arm around the shoulder of a kid who needs that support is really important, because you might be the only arm around the shoulder he gets.
Yeah, or a high five, or a fist pump,
or a fist pump.
Just a smile.
Just a simple bit of physical contact, just, you know, to make them feel better.
Cool. I'm going to do one-word answers. I've got a few things I'm curious about. Okay, I'm going to go for family.
Love them.
Bristol Bears.
Love them.
I can't just say love them. OBs.
Heart and soul. You'd probably cut me in half and I'd be green, golden, maroon.
Paul Tinkler.
Lollipops.
What does lollipops mean?
Tinks was carrying lollipops in his pocket when he was refereeing for anybody who was shouting on the touchline. He'd go over and say, suck on that.
He is good though, isn't he?
Yeah.
Wow, he's good.
Yeah.
Sky Academy.
Love the school. Really, I'm really proud of where I've got it to.
Yeah, nice. Rugby.
My life.
Cool. Mate. Legend. Fist pump. Strong work. Catch you soon. Thanks a lot.